case for this morning, the United States versus Bermia Boone. Mr. Gutierrez.
May it please the court, Gerardo Gutierrez on behalf of the defendant appellant, Bermia Boone, counsel. I raised two issues in this case. I'm going to focus on the Crawford issue. There's been enough talk about the obstruction of justice. I'll just stand on the brief on that. Judge, this is one of those cases where the district court seems to be on its thinnest ice when it determines that the out-of-court declarations of a no longer cooperating informant have become matters that it deems are appropriate to supply merely background to the jury. This runs directly afoul of the Confrontation Clause as described in Crawford versus Washington, and this is one of those issues where a very distinguished defense counsel at trial said, Judge, you can't do this. You can't introduce these tapes, and you can't introduce, in this case, it wasn't even the tapes because the tapes were in Spanish. They merely introduced translations of recorded conversations. This is the type of case where traditionally it's the ambit of a reviewing body such as this to say, well, you know, there was enough information here to suggest that perhaps this type of evidence should have been left out because of the constitutional challenges that could occur because it did not run the crucible of cross-examination.
As I understand it, we're talking about two passages of the transcripts, one which has to do with something that was said by this Garcia, who was the non-testifying co-conspirator.
That's correct.
And your client.
That's right.
And that's admissible under the co-conspirator exception.
That's so admissible under the co-conspirator exception.
And we've said a bunch of times that there's no Crawford problem with that.
Right.
So the only remaining passage has to do with a statement on the tapes that was admitted through the transcript from Garcia. It was originally thought to be a statement made to another co-conspirator, but it turns out it was actually made to a law enforcement officer.
That's correct, Judge.
Once the Spanish translation
was
gone back over. And so that's the offending
That's the offending statement. The statement's made to a police officer following an arrest, and, you know, this court has stated in the past that those types of statements are the types of statements that require closer scrutiny and that should be subject to cross-examination, namely because a co-defendant could be trying to diminish his role in it, trying to...
They weren't offered for the truth of the matter contained therein, simply to demonstrate why it was he confessed.
Right, Judge. I mean, you could say that to a jury, that this isn't being offered for the truth of the matter therein. Oh. I mean, we say that all the time. I mean, that's a standard instruction.
We do.
But you don't have the traditional case where...
Looking for an explanation for a confession that has been repudiated.
Right.
Which is what we're talking about.
That's correct, Judge.
And you have to show why he confessed other than the fact that he was overborne, his will was overborne. Simplest ways to show what the motivation was for confessing.
But I ask this question.
I believe that my co-defendant, or one of my other co-defendants, had copped out. I was stuck. I told the truth.
Right. It'd be one thing
and if... And he didn't even say anything, as a matter of fact. All he said was, I told the truth.
Right. Right. But this is the type of statement...
I understand your outrage.
I'm not outraged, Judge. I'm just...
No, I know you're not.
I'm just trying to fashion this rule to benefit the defense side versus the government side. But the rule should be clear in this case, Judge. And the rule is that, you know, if you're going to introduce something merely to provide background, why introduce the one statement that determines that the background is merely being bolstered by simply saying, well, that's the truth.
Do you remember the famous case that George Layton got involved in when he first got elected to the state bench, where as two officers are leaving the police station in plain clothes, somebody comes running by and says, there's a guy with a broken beer bottle walking down the street there to get somebody up. Remember this?
I don't remember that, Judge, but I can see where it's going.
That's when they went to arrest him and arrested the guy, and he cut up one of the police officers with a broken beer bottle, that they had no probable cause for doing this because there was no specific allegation by this. So the statement made by the witness or by the unknown witness was inadmissible as hearsay.
Right.
And it wasn't. It was simply to show why they were arresting.
I don't think that case is the case in this case, Judge. I think the case in this case is more like the case where somebody is saying, this was said to me after I arrested him.
Do you mean a simple statement, I told him the truth?
No. The difference is this. In one case, it's an innocent bystander running by with nothing to gain and telling the police something has occurred. I mean, we rely in society on good Samaritans, on people to speak up.
I don't.
That's a big difference than when somebody's under arrest and saying, "Well, look, now I found religion. I wanna start confessing. I wanna tell you the truth now. I wanna tell you everything I know about my co-defendant."
Police officer walked in to the defendant and said, "You know, your co-defendant has just laid the whole thing on you, and it's a lie."
That's right.
That's perfectly appropriate.
And it's appropriate because.
Well, it is. They say it is.
Well, they say
it
is.
I didn't make it up.
I was hoping you hadn't, Judge, but the point that I'm advancing here is it's just an extension of the case where you have a disgruntled cooperating informant to begin with, somebody who's just been caught with 56 kilos. And now he wants to say, "Oh yeah, listen, let me tell you everything about everything I know. In this case, my brother-in-law set me up with this, and it's all my wife's family's fault, and it probably has something to do with his own father." So he's laying everything at the doorstep of somebody else's family, and then all of a sudden, when his deal doesn't become the type of deal that he had wanted originally from the government, then he says, "Well, you know, everything I said is off the table. I'm done with you. I'm not testifying for whatever reason." The government's perfectly at liberty to tell about all the statements that he had made with his brother-in-law. But he's not at liberty to say to the police, "Well, listen, you know, this is what I know, and I'm telling you the truth." And then later on, the police are saying, "Yeah, he said to me, listen, this is what I know, this is the truth, and because I'm a police officer, you should believe me because I'm not here to test the lie."
The specific thing you were complaining about was his statement to the defendant saying, "I told him the truth." That's the thing you're complaining about.
Right. He's bolstering without somebody like Mr. Michek or myself going up there and saying, "Okay, you said the truth, but what did you have to benefit from it?" And if suddenly his benefit is off the table...
The issue wasn't whether he told the truth. The issue is
right.
whether
he said he told the truth.
Because he thought he told the truth.
That's correct.
Difference.
Well,
if
there's...
Stand in the way of your argument.
I'll reserve my final minute for the obstruction.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Bell?
May it please the Court, Carol Bell on behalf of the United States. There were two transcripts as well as two tape recordings that were introduced in the trial at issue and two statements that have been complained of. One of those statements was a statement that was made by a government witness in response to a question by the trial counsel to describe a telephone call that was placed by the cooperator to the defendant, Mr. Bermia Boone, and in response to the question, said that the cooperator did call the defendant, which of course is a hearsay statement. The district court properly and carefully handled the introduction of that hearsay, sustained the defense objection, struck the answer, issued a curative instruction, and then at the end of trial also instructed the jury using Seventh Circuit Pattern Jury Instruction 1.06 regarding his...
The subject is Spain. It's dear to my heart. Go ahead. I'm still chairman of that committee.
I'm glad to hear it, Your Honor. So that's the first statement that was at issue, and I don't believe there could be any abuse of discretion on the district court's part in handling that statement in the context of the larger trial. The second statement at issue came out through the transcript of a tape that was recording the cooperator's body wire audio during the drug deal on the 26th. And as the government acknowledged in a letter that it filed with the court last Friday, the contested portion of that recording that the defendant has raised, there was a portion during which the cooperator was speaking or seemed to be directing his comments to law enforcement agents. And that portion was, he sent these two guys with me. He don't want to come. I don't know what to do. But he's the one in the blue shirt. And at trial, there was an objection before the comment in the blue shirt was read. And indeed, that statement was never read to the jury through the government and its witness, although the transcripts were available. As the district court's record makes clear, that statement was not offered and did not come into the evidence for its truth. It was an admissible statement to explain why the law enforcement agents took a subsequent action, that is, namely identifying the guy in the blue shirt as being one of the drug dealers at the Burger King and arresting that individual. So whether or not the statement was true doesn't matter. It's the fact that it was made, and it's used to explain the flurry of activity and arrest that happened afterward. Moreover, the district court did not err in denying the motion for mistrial after the introduction of that statement because the judge instructed the jury not to consider any non-defendant statements from that transcript for their truth. The district court was plainly aware of the limited introduction of that evidence, as was the jury. Lastly, as the court discusses in the transcripts, the defense had an opportunity to review and redact the transcripts that the government introduced at trial, having received those transcripts the weekend before that Thursday trial began. The defense chose not to redact that statement. And even if there was any error committed by the district court in handling the introduction of this transcript with
What would you suggest the redacted part have been?
The redaction could have been, according to the defense, they would like the comment, I don't know what to do, but he's the one in the blue shirt, to have been redacted, as they believe that statement identified the defendant improperly in violation of Crawford. But even if there was an error, as claimed, this was a harmless error. This was not a case where the blue shirt being worn by this individual connected him to the drug deal, and this was what the jury's verdict hinged upon. There was an overwhelming amount of evidence of the defendant's guilt at trial, including his identification as it being his voice on the tape.
Well, you have to do this on a harmless error basis.
Excuse me, Your Honor, I don't believe I caught that.
We have to use the harmless error review, in your opinion.
I don't believe that the court would need to get to the harmless error review, as I believe that this statement was properly admitted by the district court. In addition, the defendant's story that told to the court and the jury was implausible and extremely weak. This was the unluckiest man in the world who drove up from Texas and had the bad luck to be involved in a drug deal surrounded by two individuals who were using his phone while he was unaware they were setting up the drug deal in the car with him. He rode in the one tractor trailer that had the 56 kilograms of cocaine inside of it. He showed up at the Burger King and was just merely ordering a hamburger when a third drug dealer came up and joined the conversation inside that was recorded on and read to the jury through the transcript. The story was implausible. The government's evidence was incredibly strong, and so even if there was error, it was harmless in this situation with the introduction of the blue shirt statement. If there aren't any further questions from the panel, I would respectfully request that this court uphold the defendant's conviction and sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Bell.
How much time is he?
One and a half.
May I suggest you give him 2.5 minutes or you occupy too much of his time?
I'll give him 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Well, I don't think I'll need that much time. It's getting on in time here. What I was going to say, getting back to the two arguments ago about whether every defendant who testifies can get hit with the obstruction of justice. Whatever happened to the general denial? You know, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Somebody else did it.
Plea of not guilty and everybody's involved.
Yeah, yeah. With respect to that, I think that on the record, there's not enough. I mean, there's not enough nexus in the case for the court to say, you know what, Mr. Bermia Boone, your general denial just doesn't make any sense. You did it. We heard all the tapes. We heard all the Crawford errors that came in, and we can hear the harmless error arguments later on, but I still think that by the virtue of you testifying here, you've obstructed justice willfully. At least the court could give us something a little more concise, a statement, one line, one sentence saying, I think you obstructed justice because you lied about this, or you didn't come here looking to sell a truck like you say you did. There's no evidence that he didn't come here looking for a truck like he said he did. I mean, it could be that everything he said was the absolute truth, and, oh, yes, and by the way, there was this drug deal. But, you know, there's nothing solid enough concrete for me to argue here that that he didn't do it versus for the court to say, well, because he testified, he must have obstructed justice.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. And, Mr. Gutierrez, you took this case by appointment, did you, the Lisi appeal? You have the expression of gratitude to the court for your representation of your client. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Court will be in recess until tomorrow.